News Centre.
From the Sky News Centre at 3. The UN Security Council is meeting to discuss the situation following the toppling of President Bashar al-Assad's regime. Global leaders have welcomed the fall, but now have concerns about who will lead the country. Photojournalist Paul Conroy was in Syria during the civil war in 2012. He thinks it's time people there are left to decide who governs them.
I think the Syrian people now are wise enough. If they see it closing down in any kind of extreme fundamental position, I think they will simply rebel against that. I don't think they will accept another 25 years of extreme rule.
Prosecutors have told a court a teenager was stabbed in white-hot anger following a row over a teddy bear. 18-year-old Hassan Sentamu has previously admitted manslaughter but has pleaded not guilty to the murder of Eliane Andam in Croydon last September. Health leaders are warning cases of the flu are skyrocketing, with a particular spike among children. Mixed with COVID, norovirus and the respiratory virus RSV, officials claim a quaddemic of disease is putting record pressure on the NHS. The Health Secretary, Wes Streeting, has held a meeting of trust bosses in England, asking them to put patients above targets and prioritise need with hospital beds near capacity.
I know there's so much more to do. We inherited a historic crisis in both the NHS and social care. Of course, we haven't solved all of those problems in the first 5 months, but we have hit the ground running, and what we will see over the course of this Parliament is sustained improvement.
Donald Trump has signalled he'd end birthright citizenship, which gives legal right to people born in the US but to undocumented parents. In a wide-ranging interview, the incoming US president also urged Vladimir Putin to reach an immediate settlement to end the war in Ukraine. And Wicked, Twisters, Gladiator 2 and Inside Out 2 are among the films in the running for the Golden Globe Cinematic Achievement Prize. Nominations for 2025 have been announced. That's the latest. I'm Simon English.
Are you self-employed or a sole proprietor? If so, you're required to file your self-assessment tax returns to HM Revenue and Customs, that's HMRC, on or before the 31st of January to avoid penalties for late returns. Archie and Kingsley offer professional services, which include filing annual self-assessment tax and VAT returns. They can help you to complete them ahead of time and meet your obligations to HMRC, avoiding fines and financial penalties. They're accessible, reliable and flexible. So contact them today for a free consultation on how they can help you to manage your returns effectively. Call 077 334 5767. Visit the website archiekingsley.co.uk or find them on the bcfmradio.com homepage.
Happy birthday to me, riding buses for free with my free birthday bus pass. Happy birthday to me. Nice one, mate.
If you live in the west of England's Mayoral Combined Authority or North Somerset, you can enjoy unlimited free bus travel for the whole of your birthday month. Running until the end of November 2025. Apply now at birthdaybus.co.uk. Eligible routes only. Funded by the UK government.
One nation, one world. On Bristol's BCFM 93.2. Inclusive radio for Bristol. We are Bristol's first community radio station. BCFM.
Good afternoon, Bristol. Welcome back to BCFM. This is Love and Science, and I'm your host, George Edwards. We have a full-on show for you today. We are going to be talking about some health stories from pancreatic cancer to dementia and brain microbiomes, but we're also going to be exploring the outer reaches of space, well, the solar system at least, near the sun with some new satellites that have been launched recently. But I'm not going to tell you about those. Our guests are going to tell you about those later. But first of all, here is the Stereophonics with Dakota.
Thinking
take a look at me now. So 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 take a look at me now.
That is Dakota by the Stereophonics, which my partner saw live at a Coldplay concert last year, actually. And I'm very annoyed at that, because I think I saw Coldplay the year before, and we had Steve Coogan as Alan Partridge come and sing at ours instead of the Stereophonics, which I think, as amazing as Alan Partridge is, Stereophonics are another level. Anyway, welcome back to BCFM. This is Love and Science, and I'm your host, George Edwards. I've got two guests with me on the show today. Coramé White and Ash Snook. I'm going to start with you, Coramé. You've not been on the show for a while, but what have you been up to in the recent weeks?
Hiya, George. Nice to be back. So I finished my master's dissertation, and then I just took a bit of a decompression trip back home to Ireland to see family and friends, which was lovely.
Very nice. And I was going to say, was the weather okay?
We've had, absolutely not. Never.
Expected. Well, we've had awful weather here. So Ireland should get the same treatment, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wouldn't be fair otherwise. What about you, Ash? What have you been up to in the last week since you were on?
So yesterday I took the trip up to the attic to retrieve Christmas decorations down. So I've been getting quite Christmassy over the last week. I think that's been the focus of my attention at the moment after a tough year.
Fair enough, as it should be. I've started getting Christmassy as well. I've put up 3 trees in the last 3 weeks. Anyway, enough about Christmas. More about science. This is a science show after all, not a Christmas show. We're going to come to our first story of the show in a bit, but first of all, here is REO Speedwagon with Can't Fight This Feeling.
Running around in circles in my mind, and it always seems that I'm following you. Science on BCFM.
Welcome back to BCFM. This is Love and Science, as Lizzie Daly just told you, and I am your host, George Edwards, not Lizzie Daly, unfortunately for you guys. We have our first story of the show now, and it's coming to us from Cora May White. So welcome back on the show, first of all.
Hey George, thank you.
And what is the story you've got for us today?
So my story is about a very interesting satellite launch that happened earlier this week. On the 5th of December, the world's first precision flying formation mission was launched by ESA. That's the European Space Agency. And this involved two satellites being launched in a formation that allowed one to cast a shadow, the sun's shadow, over the other to emulate a solar eclipse just for that spacecraft.
Well, that's pretty cool. They're making artificial solar eclipses. That's an interesting thing to be doing up in space. Why are they wanting to make artificial solar eclipses?
Well, this is going to allow ESA to study the sun's corona, which is very difficult to do unless there's a solar eclipse. And solar eclipses are quite rare, and they're only visible for short periods of time in certain places on Earth. But this mission will allow ESA researchers to create a solar eclipse on demand for 6 hours at a time, and they estimate that it's going to allow them to create thousands of artificial solar eclipses over the course of the two-year mission.
Thousands, that's impressive. And thousands lasting 6 hours.
Yeah.
So 6 hours is actually pretty long for a solar eclipse. Most solar eclipses last, as I'm sure many people are aware who may have seen a solar eclipse, they last for minute or couple at max. So making one that can last 6 hours will be very, very beneficial to the researchers. But we'll come back to that. First of all, what is the, you mentioned the corona, what is the sun's corona and why are we so interested in it?
So the corona is the uppermost area of the sun's atmosphere. It's hotter than the surface of the sun itself. And studying it is going to allow researchers to answer lots of the most interesting mysteries about the sun, such as why its atmosphere is hotter than the surface itself, and why solar winds accelerate. So it's going to give us the opportunity to explore lots of areas of solar science that we haven't had the opportunity to do so before.
Right, it's interesting that it's hotter in the corona than the surface. Obviously, in Earth, it's much, much colder, I'm sure. I don't know if people have seen Iron Man, but there's a scene in Iron Man where Iron Man flies up into the upper atmosphere and the suit freezes up because it's so cold up there, but it's so warm down on the surface. So it's odd that it's flipped up in space, but I guess that's exactly what they're trying to figure out. Why is it hotter in the corona, which means crown in Spanish, by the way, and that's why it's called a corona, because it makes a crown sort of shape around the outside of the sun. But as we mentioned before, up till now, scientists have only been able to study the corona and its properties during solar eclipses. So why why can they only study it during a solar eclipse?
Well, it's much easier to study it during a solar eclipse because the light waves can cause diffraction in telescope lenses, which ruins the image. But the distance between the two spacecrafts that ESA have launched are going to allow them to create a much sharper image, so to be able to study it in much more detail.
Okay, so it's easier to study it during a solar eclipse because the image... Well, the images are...
Yeah, the images are sharper.
Yeah, slightly better than if you were doing it otherwise, because if the moon's not in the way, there's too much light coming at you, essentially. Nice. Okay, so they're wanting to use them to study the corona, but are there any plans for the future? Are they going to launch more to do other research or anything?
Well, Amir Caspi, who's a physicist of the Southwest Research Institute of Boulder, said that this mission opens up a new discovery space for observations that have been inaccessible until now. This opens up opportunity for lots of different research projects. For example, the researchers are hoping that they can use similar satellites to create a network of interlinking telescopes with other satellites, which would allow a wider telescope image than anything that could be currently launched independently from Earth currently.
Okay, so we're going to try use it to make telescopes bigger than the James Webb or the Hubble, essentially. That's cool. So there you go. There's some new things on the horizon horizon of the sun, I should say, for ESA, the European Space Agency. If you do want to go read a bit more about this article, it's on Science News and it's titled "A Spacecraft Duo Will Fly in Formation to Create Artificial Solar Eclipses." And there's a picture on here of two satellites. But I don't know if that's definitely pictures of the actual satellites themselves or some AI creation of the satellites, but you can go read it on Science News to find out a bit more about that story. Our next story is going to be going from the outer reaches of space back down to Earth and going to be exploring pancreatic cancer, but I'll tell you more about that in a bit. First of all, here is Lord Huron with Ends of the Earth.
Winds on to river, I'm gonna see where it leads. Oh, there's a mountain that no man has mounted, I'm gonna stand on the peak. Out there's a land that time don't command, wanna be the first to arrive. No time for pondering why I'm wandering on while we both survive. To the ends of the earth, would you follow me? There's a world that was meant for us to see. To the ends of the earth, would you follow me? If you won't have a say, my
world that was meant for us. doesn't mean I'm ready to stay. What good is living the life you've been given if all you do is stand in place? I'm on a river that winds on forever. Follow till I get where I'm going. Maybe I'm heading to die, but I'm still gonna try. I guess I'm going alone.
If you care about making a difference in your community, have great communication skills, and are a natural problem solver, plus enjoy keeping physically fit, you could be a whole-time firefighter at Avon Fire and Rescue Service.
It's the best job in the world because every day is different. It's the variety. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Registrations to apply open on 6th of January 2025. Please visit avonfire.gov.uk/careers for more information and sign up to the AFNRS mailing list for the latest updates.
Welcome back to BCFM. This is Love and Science and I'm your host, George Edwards. In the last story, we were talking about space satellites that have just been launched by the European Space Agency to make artificial solar eclipses so that scientists can study the corona of the sun, that's the outer atmosphere of the sun, in better detail. But we're going to go from space to back on Earth, and we're going to be talking about a health story, but it's a health and environment story linked together, which is sort of why I chose it, because it's a bit of an odd one. So lizard saliva could make it easier to find certain tumours in the human pancreas. It's a very odd statement to start a story off with, I know. But to answer your sudden barrage of questions, no. Scientists aren't putting pure lizard spit into our bodies to find cancer. They are, however, using a molecule found in the liver, in the lizard saliva to do so. So let me explain. First of all, let's start with the pancreas. What is the pancreas? It's an organ in our body, and its main purpose is to produce insulin, which is a hormone that controls the level of sugars in our blood. Making this insulin is hard, and only specific cells called beta cells are able to do it, and sometimes these cells malfunction and form insulinomas, which are rare tumours affecting 1 to 4 people in a million globally a year. But despite it being quite uncommon, it is it's relatively common, but it's very, very debilitating. And insulinomas are benign tumours in the pancreas that cause low blood sugar and sudden fainting, and they're currently very hard to detect with current tumour scanners. So this is where the lizard comes in, and the protein that the lizard has within its spit. So the lizard itself is called the Gila monster, or Gila monster, or its Latin name is Heloderma suspectum, and it's found in the deserts of southwestern United States. And the protein that's found in its saliva is called exendin 4, and it's been used before to treat diabetes, which is the condition caused by malfunctioning insulin-producing cells in the pancreas. And exendin 4 works by binding onto a protein receptor called GLP-1R, on the insulin cells, triggering the cell to produce insulin. So this protein comes along, finds this other protein receptor sitting on the surface of the insulin cell, binds onto it, and that cell will then produce insulin. It's like an on switch. In the 2000s, Martin Gotthardt at Radboud University in the Netherlands found that insulinomas also contain many of these receptors, the GLP-1R receptors. So this meant exendin 4 could be a key protein to localise the small insulinoma tumours, because they could bind onto that receptor and pinpoint where that tumour is, or whether there is a tumour or not. And by slightly editing exendin 4, the protein could be used in a new type of PET scan, or PET scan, and those stand for positron emission tomography. And it's a method used to detect tumours or create 3D images of the inside of the body using radioactive atoms. So you can
put someone through a PET scan and create a 3D image of their stomach or their pancreas in this case, and you can see that maybe on one side of the pancreas there's a slight tumour. And the new scan, using the exendin 4 protein from the lizard spit, was able to find the insulinoma tumours in 95% of confirmed cases of insulinoma, which is an incredible statistic. So for reference, current PET scans without the exendin 4 protein can only find them 65% of the time. In order to confirm whether a person had the insulinoma or whether the PET scan with exendin 4 got it slightly wrong, the scientists tested the tracer molecule on 69 people diagnosed with low blood sugar. Now, a tracer molecule is the molecule used to find a tumour, so in this case it was the exendin 4 molecule. 53 people were found to have insulinomas and they were then surgically removed. And of those 53 that the scientists themselves found to have insulinomas, the exendin 4 PET scan found 50 people's tumours, hence the 95% success rate, which is, again, amazing for any sort of health scan in general. So that's the lizard spit helping cancer, but you may be wondering if there's ways to treat insulinomas. I did say they're very debilitating, they can cause sudden fainting and low blood sugar, but there are ways to treat it and help the people who suffer from it. If the insulinoma is found, doctors can surgically remove the insulinoma, and this will cure the patient and allow them to live a normal life. But the difficulty has always been finding these insulinomas. Current methods like CT scans and MRI scans, I can never remember which one is the donut scan where you go into a big donut. I think it's a CT scan. Anyway, not the point. So these CT scans and MRI scans are good at finding large malignant tumours in the pancreas, but they're not so good at finding the small insulinoma and smaller tumours in the pancreas and other places. So using this exendin 4 PET scan, this lizard spit molecule, is really going to help scientists, doctors and researchers help treat people suffering from insulinomas. So that's that story. If you want to go and read a bit more, it's also on Science News, like the last story we talked about. And the title is Lizard Spit Can Help Detect a Rare Pancreatic Tumour. We're going to come to our next story of the show from Ash, all about the brain and its possible microbiome, well, it's probable microbiome that is floating around inside our brain. We're going to find out a bit more about that and how it could help us understand and prevent dementia. But first of all, here is Nickelback with How You Remind Me.
Never made it as a wise man, I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing, tired of living like a blind man, I'm sick of sight without a sense of feeling, and this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me of what I really am. This is how you remind me. Scream.
never made it as a wise man. I couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing. And this is how you remind me. This is how you remind me. This is how you remind me.
Diversity. This is Bristol's BCFM 93.2.
Welcome back to BCFM. This is Love and Science, and I'm your host, George Edwards. Now, we've just had two stories, one from space about satellites being launched in conjunction to create artificial solar eclipses, and one about how lizard spit and a protein called exendin-4 within lizard spit is able to detect 95% of pancreatic insulinoma cancer in patients, which is incredible. And we have another health story for you now, and it's coming from Ash. So, Ash, what's going on here?
So this is the really interesting idea that the brain, long thought to be sterile, could in fact have a microbiome, and also how this could potentially help us understand and prevent dementia.
Okay, well, that's a very interesting start, and you've got me hooked. But I guess we should first of all establish what is a microbiome.
Yes. Now, this is a community of microbes which live in or on a living creature. So for example, most of us have heard of our gut microbiome, so our friendly bacteria, and how important that is. And we have microbes on our skin and all over our body. So just the idea that we have one in the brain.
Which is interesting, because we were talking about this before the show started, actually. And you mentioned that scientists and researchers thought the brain was sterile. So suddenly finding all these microbes in the brain must be a bit surprising.
Yeah, it has been met with scepticism in the community. There's groups of scientists that are going with the research, thinking this is a new step forward, and others saying that it's not possible. And because of that, it's really hard to get funding for research. It's really hard to carry on the research, which is why this specific research is so insightful and interesting.
Okay, and so How do a brain microbiome and dementia link?
Now, when people think of dementia, they usually think of a disease that cannot be treated. But in fact, dementia can be caused by a number of different factors and diseases, such as microbial infections. So, for example, viruses, fungi, bacteria. Now, people have been found with dementia symptoms, and by accident, these dementia symptoms were found to be caused by microbes. And when this infection was treated, their symptoms went away or reversed. So people that lost the ability to speak or drive or work went back to driving, went back to working, went back to speaking. Huh. And a lot of the time, patients with dementia, which is caused by an infection, this is discovered by accident. As when you have sort of dementia-like symptoms, your first port of call is not to check whether they've got a microbial infection, as this is normally quite a long shot and it's quite risky. So this is really interesting how it's linked.
That's impressive. So possibility of like infections in the brain microbiome might be a cause of dementia in some people. I did not know that microbes could cause dementia. I thought it was just Alzheimer's disease in general. And that's good that, like, I guess not all forms of dementia are treatable. Alzheimer's is a very difficult disease to treat, and they're still trying to do it no matter how quickly Grey's Anatomy seem to have figured it out, but not, you know, in real life. But
It's good that you can treat some forms, especially if it is this microbial cause. So what did this research specifically do? It looked at brain microbiome and dementia. So what did it do?
Yeah, so it had control brains, so you'd say healthy brains, and Alzheimer's brains. So it sampled the control and Alzheimer's brains on Petri dishes to see if the microbes would grow. Now, it's important to note here that not all microbes grow just out on a Petri dish. They need special conditions. So they also sampled them in human cells, for example, blood cells. And then they used gene amplification to really confirm the microbial identity. So using DNA to actually confirm that what they see is the species.
Amazing. And just to give you a bit of insight into gene amplification, not that I've done much of it myself, but gene amplification is done by a method called PCR, polymerase chain reaction, and essentially they find a specific area of DNA that they're interested in, and they cut that out of an individual DNA strip, and then they put it through a reaction process that makes multiple copies of it, so it's much easier to read the series of bases, so those ATCG bases that code for proteins and stuff, and by doing that you can find out what species of bacteria, for example, is in your system. So you might have a lot of DNA, but it's a mix of different bacterial DNA. So one bacterial strain might be from E. coli, and another one might be from something like Staphylococcus instead. By doing that, they were able to figure out what bacteria were in Alzheimer's brains versus control brains. So what did they find from that PCR test?
Yeah, in the control brains, microbes differed between different regions of the brain and different individuals, hosting mainly fungi, bacteria, algal-related species, and one virus, but viruses were not particularly present. They don't tend to thrive in the brain. But in the Alzheimer's dementia brains, there were overgrowths of certain bugs, such as Streptococcus and Staphylococcus, their bacteria, and in the yeasts, ones like Candida and Cryptococcus. Also, a mysterious algal species, which not much is known about, which is really intriguing. But these are incredibly exciting results. But like I said, they are met with scepticism within the community.
Okay, well, that is impressive. So they've clearly been able to identify that some growths of certain microbes in the brain are linked to people having Alzheimer's disease or dementia. It's not the definite link, especially if there's some skeptics around it, but
yeah, you can't say, again, it's correlation doesn't equal causation, so just because they've got them, but it's very compelling results that there is overgrowths in that diseased
brains. Yeah, and it's a very good start for the research. But do we know what's next for this area of research?
So the team want to learn a few things, so how to prevent, how to diagnose. So diagnosis at the moment is quite difficult. So you need what's called a lumbar puncture, which is sampling cerebral fluid, brain fluid, which comes with risks. And they need to find out what percent of dementia cases are caused by infections. And they do reckon at the moment that it's over half, which is a massive number. But they have provided some advice. So this paper's provided some advice. So for example, vaccines. Now, looking at all the vaccines that are sort of available to us, so diphtheria, tetanus, zoster, all those vaccines, all to a greater or lesser extent are protective against Alzheimer's disease.
That's
so keeping on top of your vaccines. Hygiene, good hygiene to prevent cold and flus. So obviously they can penetrate the blood-brain barrier. Good oral health. So some dental microbes have been found to increase the permeability of the blood-brain barrier. Now, this is how sort of microbes get into the brain, so that's not a good thing. So good hygiene is very important. And finally, diet, exercise and health. You know,
the classic trigger.
Yeah, that's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Ash, for that story. If you do want to go and read a bit more about that, it's on the Guardian website. The brain microbiome, could understanding it help prevent dementia? Well, that's our last proper story of the show, but next I do have a clip from the Paddle Pod to play you, so do stay tuned for that. And then after that, I think you should go and find out a bit more about the Paddle Pod and go listen to a few other episodes. But before we come to the Paddle Pod, here is the Two Door Cinema Club with Changing of the Seasons. That is Two Door Cinema Club with Changing of the Seasons. This is BCFM, you're listening to Love and Science, and I'm your host, George Edwards. Now, for our last section of the show, I thought I'd do something a bit different. As many of you may know, myself and Casey Spry, one of our regular guests, created our own podcast recently. It's called The Paddle Pod, and it's the only science podcast actually hosted from paddleboards. That's our little tagline. We explore the world of marine and river science and paddle around rivers and canals in the southwest of England. And I thought I'd play a clip for you all from episode 2, which is called Saving the Avon. And it's going to have a little chat with Emma Nicol, a campaigning conservationist from Conham Bathing Society. So do have a quick listen to this and see what you think. Right, so Casey and I are at Conham River Park, which is a 20-minute drive out of the centre of Bristol. It's on the stretch of the Avon, which is absolutely beautiful, and we've chosen the perfect day to do it.
Yeah, sun's been in and out a bit this morning, but I mean, it's only 9 a.m, and we've already met some swimmers, because we know that this spot is a bathing site, so we've already seen some of those. Some crazy people here at 7 a.m. this morning. It is cold, but this is genuinely beautiful. Like, there's no traffic. I think that's my favourite thing about this place so far, is that we're not really close to any roads.
Yeah, it's really quiet.
Quite quiet. So I'm going to lower my voice, and I'm going to keep it quiet as well.
It's got a load of different plants. I'm not a plant expert. I have no idea what most of these are. There's foxgloves, little water reeds, some lavender, and then a load of bright... Oh, there's wild garlic and thyme.
See, I wouldn't even be able to recognise that, so you know more than me.
Probably not that much more, but thank you. It's very flat water here as well. We've been told it's a tidal river, so basically when the tide comes in, the water will rise up and it'll drop as the tide goes out of the Avon estuary. It's wide, flat, the wind's not too strong, so we're quite easily able to sort of glide along, essentially, which is quite nice. The current's not strong at all, so if anyone does want to come paddling here, it's quite an easy place to get in and out of.
Yeah, it's a very nice spot. There's a good launch site. It's about a 5-minute walk from the car park. Good place to launch paddleboards. A good place to launch just yourselves if you want to go swimming as well. In this episode, we're mainly going to be talking about the efforts that are being done to save the River Avon, because it does have a bit of a pollution problem. But before we talk about kind of the efforts and the solutions, George has done a bit of research on the status of the river. So, George, what have you found from your research?
Well, yeah, so I did a bit of research on the sort of pollution levels of rivers across the UK and the Avon specifically, and I found a quite concerning statistic from the Rivers Trust, which is a UK-based charity. In 2020, no river in England or Wales, not a single one, was in good health.
Not a single river?
Not a single river.
Well, that's not
across two countries that make up the United Kingdom. 75% of UK rivers pose a serious risk to human health, and there are over 590 reports of illness after people were swimming in rivers linked to sewage pollution. And a UK House of Lords report recently found that only 14% have a good ecological status, which is different to a good health.
Right, what's the difference?
So good health essentially means that it's safe enough for people to swim in and wildlife to live in. So no rivers have that.
Right.
And only 14% have a good ecological status, which is the river is doing okay, the wildlife is surviving, you may still not want to go swimming.
Right, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So only 14% of rivers have a good ecological status, and not a single one is in good health. And this is all because there's sources of pollution coming from chemicals and wastewater treatment works, but then also agricultural pollution.
It's always nice to hear that people are, you know, fighting for the environment. And we're really lucky today because we're going to meet someone who has been doing some work fighting to save the River Avon. She's going to explain a bit more about what she's been up to.
We're here with Emma Nicol, a campaigner and science communicator from Conham Bathing Society. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. It's nice to meet you guys here on the river this morning.
So, how did you get into campaigning?
I've always been really interested in the environment. I actually have a background in the arts, and so campaigning kind of felt like a natural way to act on my passion for environmental science. I was a rep with Surfs Against Sewage for quite a long time.
So what was the inspiration behind Conham Bathing?
With Conham Bathing, I think there was a few of us making movements about doing similar things, and we linked up, and I guess the rest is kind of history, because we're 4 years into the campaign now, and we've had quite a lot of media attention recently, a lot of kind of press. I don't think any of us expected the campaign to be where it is now, but it's really amazing to be surrounded by community, so the community of campaigners, but also the community who love the river. The thing with Conwy River Park is it is a site that people in Bristol use. It's just about recognising that people access and use the water here, and we want it to be cleaner for people. And we also all take in turns to sample, which is something that we do once a week over the summer, or the official bathing water season, which runs from May until September. So yeah, we're a small powerhouse of women, which is cool.
So you said a part of your job is to collect water samples from the river. So we're gonna do a bit of that now. But before we do that, what is the main purpose?
So with the sampling, what we're testing for is pollutants that cause harm to human health, E. coli and enterococci. And when they're over a certain level, they become unsafe for humans. The samples that we collect are processed by Wessex Water, who also tests for a range of other parameters. So they look at nitrates and phosphates, which can cause algal blooms and cause the river to suffocate. It rained yesterday, so that's why we're kind of interested in doing a sample today to see how the water quality might be. We need to do a couple of flushes, so I'll do that first.
Just don't fall in.
I know, don't, every time. So before I pour it into 3 bottles, you can see that the water is quite clear.
Mm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not polluted. So we've had samples in the past that have had 20 times the safe limit of E. coli in them.
Yeah.
And they've looked like this.
Wow, okay. Yeah, you wouldn't know from first look at all, would you?
You wouldn't know. It looks quite clear. There we go.
Right, so we've collected some of the samples now, but could you tell us anything about the current status of what the water is actually like?
Now, I'm going to let Emma talk about the current status of the water in the actual episode. And if you want to go listen to the full episode of the Paddle Pod and all the other episodes of season 1, search the Paddle Pod on Spotify or Substack, and subscribe to us on Substack and follow on Spotify. We also have an Instagram and TikTok at the Paddle Pod, so find us there too, and we'll release information about new episodes on there. Season 2 is on its way. Now, thank you very much for joining us in today's show. Here is Keen with On the Road, and we'll see you next week. Out of my home and going
there's still so many things you don't know. Don't you look back, I've no doubt that I will see you on the road. And when the world's laying you low, why don't you let me carry your load? When things get bad, you know you'll have a friend all along the road. So when the sun is coming up and you go, there's still so many things you don't know. Don't you look back, I've no doubt that I will meet you on the road.
Is Bristol's BCFM on 93.2, online and on your mobile. BCFM is an award-winning community radio station for Bristol, bringing you national news on the hour. Live from the Sky News.